there's a really bizarre story involving the Houston Rockets and Daniel House, who has filled in admirably as the Rockets have been shorthanded without Eric Gordon, without Chris Paul. The Rockets and House failed to reach a contract agreement yesterday. So that means since House is out of his allotment of NBA service days on his two-way contract between the Rockets and the Rio Grande Valley Vipers of the G League, he has to return to the Rio Grande Valley Vipers and will probably be there the rest of the season. The team's expected to make a short-term roster fix, picking a player off of the waiver wire. Eric Gordon is expected to be back very soon, possibly as soon as tonight.
What a depressing situation for Daniel House. I know his agents obviously do the negotiating. He wants, you know, the most money, and he wants to hit free agency as early as possible, maybe as early as this summer. I don't think that'll happen. But could you imagine, you know, playing with James Harden on a team that's playing pretty well? You're yourself doing pretty well. You feel like, hey, I'm establishing myself as an NBA player.
There's a buzz about you.
Yeah, and due to the way that these things work, like the financial structure of the NBA, all of a sudden you're being sent to the G League where you're going to be there for an unknown amount of time, and you're like, damn it, all I want to do is play in the NBA, and I'm finally playing well.
At the very least, though, making the exact same amount of money, right? The contract stays. Does he get bucked down in salary too? This is just the strangest thing to me, is that they're not allowed to play him in the NBA, but they have the rights to him. It's the NBA CBA. I don't get it.
More bizarre, and this is from Mark Berman of Fox 26. Daniel House's agent said that the Rockets initially offered Daniel a 3-year league minimum non-guaranteed deal.
Right.
The last offer was a 3-year minimum guaranteed deal. Both were rejected. The Rockets, per this agent, Raymond Brothers, they asked the Rockets to convert his two-way contract for the remainder of the year, and the Rockets refused to do so.
And you might be wondering, like, why would the Rockets be doing this? And it's because they basically are in a spot where, since they have so many big contracts with the big three,
right,
of Harden, Paul, and Capella,
do you want to pay luxury tax for Daniel House?
Exactly.
They have to
watch every dollar.
The answer would typically be no for that. But they're also, like, they got themselves into this situation. I feel like this is what it takes to operate. But they also didn't anticipate three of their starters going down for a chunk of time in the middle of the season.
I would be very annoyed if Eric Gordon was not coming back. Because
right.
If he wasn't coming back tonight, then I'd be like, hey, you're running out of guys. You got to win these games. You have to make it work.
Well, but they would have made it work. Like, if Eric Gordon were out for another month and a half, then Daniel House might have, like, he had a little bit more negotiating power.
Yes.
I feel like Daniel House needs to be mad at Eric Gordon. He's like, what the hell, bro? You couldn't, like, you know, wait 2 weeks, get completely and totally healthy? Come on, man. Help me out a little bit here.
It really is a shame that Daniel House isn't working with House money. Okay, I'm going to kill myself, jump off a cliff. Hey, the Rockets, they play the Brooklyn Nets tonight. They're going to play the Lakers without LeBron James on Saturday. Both those games at Toyota Center. Meanwhile, the Golden State Warriors are back in first place in the Western Conference. They scored 51 points in the first quarter against the then first place Denver Nuggets and would hold on for a 142-111 lead. They also, the Rockets are a game back of third place in the Western Conference, for what it's worth. Anyway, here is Steve Kerr talking about all the adversity that the Warriors have faced.
I'm very proud of our guys, you know, considering where we were a couple months ago. A lot of injuries, everything else, and now here we are. You know, we've really settled in, and feels like this is a really good stretch of basketball for us.
I'm still not going to pick against Golden State until I see something else happen. I don't even know what that something else would be. It would be either like a Golden State injury or somebody else playing exceptionally well. Neither of which have happened so far this year.
They're a little too much in the mode of, I almost like when LeBron, it's weird, because LeBron with the Cavs, where the regular season, like their regular season defense almost didn't matter because you knew they were going to be a different team come playoffs. Now the entire team has turned into that with Golden State. Or like last year, okay, there's a little bit of like something's off with Golden State. Mike, you thought they were just bored.
Yes.
And I think boredom is a little bit of an oversimplification, but it's almost like a great rock band. At some point, life intervenes and people are pulling people in different directions. People have different motivations to where it's still not quite right. But when they get up on stage, even though they might hate each other, they're still producing great music. And that's what happens. So like, okay, so maybe the lead guitarist slept with the lead singer's wife. They despise each other. Their lives are in shambles. But you can't deny that the music is great. That's what the Golden State Warriors
exactly
are.
And they've never become the Boston Celtics, who much more closely resemble Oasis. I would say the Celtics are really,
Oasis,
if they figure their stuff out, are the only team that can get it together. But between Jaylen Brown and Marcus Morris shoving each other, Kyrie Irving taking shots at the rest of the team, Jaylen Brown responding. Well, it is a mess.
I guess that would be the difference, because the band Oasis, those two brothers, the one is just completely crazy, right?
Wonderwall.
The one is completely crazy. So, like, there's a limit. There's an envelope. Like, you can't have, like, genuine crazy and have it still work out. So, like, look at the Rolling Stones. Like, none of those guys are genuinely crazy, but there was a time where they just couldn't stand each other because it just wasn't, but they figured it out. So that's, I guess, the Golden State's the Rolling Stones and the Celtics are Oasis. I like that one. Which one's the crazy brother? Isn't one of them named Nigel?
I'm not 100% sure. One of the reasons that I was hoping that I'm going to Coachella in April, the weekend of my birthday.
Really?
I'm going to Coachella. I was hoping, because I had heard a rumor that Oasis might be getting back together for it, but it sounds like that is not going to happen.
Ooh, that would have been awesome.
Yes, I know. They surprise you at this thing, and I looked at the headliners. I have no idea who the hell any of the bands are. Okay. I'm so musically challenged.
You're an old all of a sudden.
I know, yeah. It's so depressing, man. I mean, my friend Brad, he gave me a playlist of all the bands that are going to be there, and he's like, all right, check some of these out so you can figure out which ones you like, so you can go from one place to the next.
Paul's going
to
be there in pressed jeans and a Hawaiian shirt. Like, hey, kids.
Oh, Hawaiian shirt lock. But I'm not sure. I need to find some sort of fetch Coachella outfit.
My wife and I we went to a Starbucks right next to Shadow Creek High School yesterday because we had a couple spare hours. Let's have a little afternoon hanging out with the wife and husband time. This is right next to the high school. We felt like the oldest people on earth because there were nothing but teenagers in there. Like, even the teachers apparently won't go to this place because it's nothing but kids. We felt like the weirdo, like, old people trying to feel cool around the kids. Didn't understand any of the lingo or anything.
I can't blame you. Yeah.
To wrap up headlines, the Jets hired Greg Williams to be their defensive coordinator. What coaching staff that's turned out to be. And Cam Newton might sit out the 2019 season due to his shoulder injury. Here is Panthers owner David Tepper talking about that.
Of course, I'm concerned about it. I think, you know, we and him are going to do everything we can to try to make that shoulder better. So I'm not going to be panicking about Cam's shoulder this year. I don't think we're going to panic about Cam's shoulder this year. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully he's great. Let's face it, we got some great young receivers on this team. They could be better. Well, they'll get better. They're brand new. They're basically effectively two rookies last year. Because Samuel's first year.
All right, cool, David Tepper. Here's what I'll say. For what it's worth, it worked for Andrew Luck.
I think basically...
Oh, it worked for Drew Brees.
I read into this, it was kind of the hypothetical of like, hey, if Cam's shoulder is not responding, what do you think about the possibility of him sitting out the year?
Yeah.
And he seemed obviously not happy with it, but he was like, yeah, he basically cited Andrew Luck as an example of how it could work out.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say it worked for Drew Brees, but Drew Brees had, as far as like a shoulder that seemed really dicey, ended up being fine and no big deal. The thing you worry about with Cam is like, how much can he? It's almost impossible for Cam to protect himself because his perfect style of play includes a whole lot of just being Cam Newton.
Yes.
So I worry about him and his health moving forward.
He looked dead in that Monday night game when they finished it up in week 15, I think it was, against the Saints. John McClain is with us, brought to you by Horn Solutions. Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, man. I missed you, John. I don't know why. It's only been a week, but there was something about this last. There was a genuine smile that came to my face when these guys reminded me that you were coming in this morning.
Thank you, Seth.
It's the scarcity of news around the Texans that I think has got me a little bit of freaked out.
I always got Texans information.
Any movements on the offensive coordinator front?
I don't think. If they were hiring an offensive coordinator, we would have heard about it.
They generally, is it safe to say, and this is like how a lot of NFL teams do it. It's not, even if they have an offensive coordinator, they're a little bit of play calling by committee, correct? They've got guys that focus on the run game, guys that focus on the passing game.
They have several people that figure into the offensive game plan. As I've said before, I think when Bill O'Brien gives up play calling, it will be to Tim Kelly, who's been with him since Penn State. The people over there say really good things about behind the scenes. But if I'm O'Brien, I don't blame him if he wants to do it another year. He and Watson have a great relationship. They're going to spend a lot of resources on their offensive line. You would think at least for a few games, maybe they'll have Fuller and QT together with Hopkins. And that would be very intoxicating, appetizing for a play caller to be in that situation compared to this season when the offensive line was so bad and Watson was holding the ball too long. But So I don't see Bill going out of the organization. I see it more like a situation when he elevated George Godsey after his first year, but then took it back over when Godsey struggled.
Is it surprising to you, John, that you have other guys who are offensive-minded head coaches who have just been hired, like Freddie Kitchens in Cleveland, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, and each of those guys has brought in an OC? I know Freddie Kitchens will still call plays, but he brought in Todd Monken from Tampa, and then Matt LaFleur is bringing in Nathaniel Hackett, who was fired by Jacksonville, that these offensive guys are also bringing in more offensive help, where it seems like O'Brien doesn't want to do that at this point.
Well, having the title and having a guy that does it are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Bill's going into his sixth year. Those guys are rookies. And Bill didn't have one the first year, and the reason is that's the way Bill Belichick does it. He makes guys earn their title. They work as position coaches, and then when he thinks it's time to elevate them, he elevates them and gives them more responsibility. In this case, Godsey had the opportunity. He blew it. Now he's in Detroit. Is he still in Detroit? And so
I think he is.
Most offensive head coaches call plays in every situation.
Yeah. Well, and as regarding that philosophy of not naming them, I don't even know. Was Brian Flores ever officially named the defensive coordinator of the Patriots this year?
Was he this year?
I don't think he was officially designated, even though he was.
Even though he is, he's never had the title. Why is it you think that if you're an offensive head coach, you always call the plays? If you're a defensive head coach, in almost every situation, you give it up to a defensive coordinator.
Is that true?
Even though you stay on top of it.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'd never thought about that before.
I would need to see if it is true.
It is true.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm not.
Is Mike Zimmer not called
plays?
I'm
not making it up.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're...
In most situations.
So it's more common for an office. Well, let's say it's only a recent trend that guys started taking back the OC mantle. Sean Payton and a couple other guys were really the only head coaches that were play callers. And now all of a sudden it's come back into vogue, I think. So maybe that'll start being the way on defense as well. I don't know. This is where I am with Bill O'Brien in the offensive coordinatorship right now. And this is where I stand. I think like any organization, whether you're the New England Patriots or anybody else, I always think that you could benefit by importing smart people, and that it's hard to grow smart people from within all the time. But I also want to give Bill O'Brien more credit than I did during the regular season for handling some of the weaknesses of that offense, including once Will Fuller went down, just frankly, like the lack of really viable wide receiving options and tight end receiving options. Because I went back yesterday, I'm watching the Eagles game, and man, like within the first two series, I'm pretty sure I saw at least two wrong routes run. Now, do we blame the Texans coaching staff for not getting that right? But there was the one play, remember early in the Philly series where Deshaun went deep to a tight end and there were two tight ends like stacked up next to each other.
Yeah.
One of those guys was in the wrong damn spot. You don't design the plays to have two tight ends within 3 feet of each other 30 yards down the field. This wasn't like some crossing pattern or something. And then on the next series where he should have had an easy outlet early on in the down when the pass protection broke down, he didn't have it. So there's that. I'm stuck in that box where I'm not going to blame Bill O'Brien for the design of the plays because I think the designs aren't being executed. And yet at the same time, Bill O'Brien is in charge of getting the plays executed. So there's something in translating the X's and O's to the field that still needs to get tweaked somehow. And I don't know where it is necessarily.
Right. And we've all talked about how when the Texans are limited, they've done a good job of like finding what they're good at and finding what they're bad at. And I think if O'Brien has gotten good at anything over time, especially based off of all the experiences he's had with it, it's at hiding the weaknesses of this offense, which they've been in bad spots several times due to injuries or due to their quarterback situation, to the point of, all right, bringing somebody else in, given some of the success they had last season, especially the 9-game winning streak. I think you also have to ask yourself this: how many coaches around the NFL after a season where they were 11-5, had a 9-game winning streak, and dealt with some of those injuries, would be willing to bring in somebody else to help out on the offensive side of things, even if everyone in the media, fans, are calling for another mind to be a part of it? I think it would be a very low number. I think coaches by nature are somewhat arrogant because you sort of have to be.
Right.
You have to be the person that everyone's following. And I think that when you have a season like this, what really merits bringing in another offensive mind, even though I think all of us would like to see some fresh blood on the staff?
Well, one thing, their offensive line was awful. They couldn't run block down the last five games counting the playoffs, in which Watson had to lead them in rushing every game, which was just pathetic. And operating with an offensive line that bad, specifically tackles who'll both be replaced, what they were able to accomplish to me was remarkable when you played behind those guys. And another thing about Watson, one of the reasons he held the ball, he was fourth in average per attempt, despite losing Will Fuller, not having Fuller for, was it 10 or 9 games, and not having a deep threat at all. And you're talking about running wrong routes. You had two rookie tight ends. You got a wide receiver who came from Denver, and you got Vincent Smith, an undrafted rookie who just watched till right up at the end. So you had really two guys that knew how to run routes, these routes, and that would be Hopkins, of course, and Ryan Griffin, and all the others were having to learn on the fly, and bringing in like DeAndre Carter, who I think was a good addition.
Yeah.
But he had to learn everything too. So I think if they could play some games with those three receivers together, and you got to think both tight ends are going to be so much better, and they flashed a lot of potential this season, specifically Jordan Thomas, who just looks like a big-time tight end. And then they have two new tackles. Rankin, they like him. He's going inside the guard. And then, of course, they're not all going to stay healthy, but if you just had them together for a little while, how prolific the offense could be.
You know, let me ask you this, John, because teams like the Patriots and other teams, they'll bring consultants in. Like Dom Capers was like a special, I can't remember what his role was with the Patriots when he spent a season with them. I think it was as a consultant slash defensive assistant. He wasn't like a co-defensive coordinator that year, was he?
I don't think so. I think he was just working on the defense.
You know, Vic Fangio went and did it for the Ravens.
Secondary
coach and special teams. Okay, so Vic Fangio came in with the Ravens. So, like, those are when Dom was with the Patriots, that's a short-term stint. He was still getting paid by whoever fired him.
He was just waiting until his next coordinator job.
But I wonder sometimes with the Texans, because one of the issues that I think they've had is identifying what their weaknesses are in-house before the season begins, like not realizing, okay, wow, we've got a situation here at offensive line. I wonder if maybe bringing guys from the outside just as consultants, or the guy that just got fired as a head coach, have him come in and be a coordinator, maybe that kind of almost quasi-outside opinion could benefit them.
I can't imagine they wouldn't know. They offered Nate Solder $16.5 million. He wanted to be in New York. He got more from the Giants and then turned out to not be worth it. And they signed three offensive linemen with the money they offered him. Turned out none of them worked out. And, I can't say it. Zach Fulton played pretty well. And Calamente is a good backup, and that's what he was in New Orleans. He played a lot because of injuries, and they didn't want to lose him, but he came here for a chance to start, and he got it. So they knew their offensive line was bad. They just didn't know it was going to be this bad again.
But I guess it's what I'm asking is when it comes to the actual game planning. Like, I know from a personnel standpoint, okay, we'd like to have better guys here, there, and there. But I would go back to like 2 years ago at the very beginning of the season when you're going in with Kendall Lamb and leaving him isolated versus good defensive ends. It seemed to be a shock to them that Kendall Lamb was as bad as he was. So I know they know where their minuses are, but I wonder if maybe just having somebody in the room that's not completely indoctrinated, like that is a veteran NFL coach, could say, hey guys, you know, I'd be a little bit concerned about this if I were you.
John, was there any possibility of hiring Mike Munchak?
Here?
Yes.
No.
Reason?
Because they got an offensive line coach O'Brien likes a lot, and Mike Devlin. And Mike's not an offensive coordinator, never wanted to be, never will be, never called to play. He's a head coach or an offensive line coach.
But theoretically, but Munchak was hired as the O-line coach in Denver?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Assistant head coach.
So you could have hired him as the same thing here.
Yeah, O'Brien likes Mike Devlin.
Does he like him more than Mike Munchak?
Well, he tried to hire Munchak when he first got the job. Mike chose Pittsburgh because he and Marcy wanted to go back to Pennsylvania because their families were getting older. And now he went to Denver because he has a daughter, husband, and grandchild there, and it puts him closer to the other daughter, Alexa, in L.A.
That's the one thing that is interesting to me, because he took the job in Pittsburgh one of the reasons given was to be closer to Scranton, PA, his hometown.
And her hometown.
And her hometown. And now he's, like, leaving again. But it's this one doesn't make quite as much sense. Because, okay, if you moved up to Pittsburgh to be closer to family, and you liked being around family there, like, why would you leave the vaunted Steelers organization for no other reason other than to be close to some more family out there? It just seems odd to me. Like,
glad Kubiak's
gone. What's going on in Pittsburgh?
They're dead.
They're just dead? You think so?
The family.
Oh, the family in Scranton?
You want to know why? That's because a lot of their family has died.
Oh.
Oh, damn.
Well, thanks.
Well,
I was just hoping for
awkward on the radio program.
Has
nothing to do with the Steelers.
I was going to ask, what's the family in Pennsylvania thinking?
So what is that? What is this?
I thought he meant the Steelers organ. The Steelers as a team and as a contender.
Mad Radio. You never know what's going to happen.
He got a lot more money. The Broncos basically laid out carte blanche anything.
Did they really?
He wanted, yeah, financially. And then Marcy, they're real close to their two daughters.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good for the...
Mike's
going to
be 59, which yeah. I saw that. I've
he looks
seen
good.
The text, and man, you look good for your age.
Made me feel old.
Coming up at the top of the hour, ask John McClain anything you want. It's going to be a bit about the Texans offseason,
we'll
championship
talk about who else
Sunday.
Has died too.
We'll discuss other deaths that are happening as well.
I'm going to list all my dead relatives. No, we're not going to go back too many generations. Places I won't move because people are dead.